as Hillary commodity trades, get cocktails as strong as White House denials at the, we couldn't resist the name, Whitewater Tavern, do some line dancing as messy as Madison's savings and loan balance sheets at Midnight Rodeo, and then we go back and go to sleep at the glorious old Capitol Hotel, in rooms with ceilings as tall as the tales we'll tell the next day in print and on TV. Little Rock by night may not be quite so much fun for the non-journalists. Several times, driving around town and on a toot, I've noticed lights burning late in the offices rented by Special Prosecutor Robert Fisk. And Little Rock by day isn't much fun for anyone. There's nobody on the downtown streets. The city has that dead look of places where people make their money behind closed doors. Every third building seems to be a lawyer's office. The Rose Law Firm occupies a whole block. Its windows are dark. The curtains don't move. It's a sinister place in a friendly red brick colonial way, as though the Continental Congress had a ministry of fear. The governor's mansion is also early American, though built more in the semi-successful country western singer style, with masonry that's a little too pink, and a pseudo-terra portico larger than the house. There's a chiropractor next door. The South Little Rock neighborhood is going to seed. Just a couple of blocks from the mansion, you can see abandoned houses, surly teens in giant pants and catty-cornered baseball caps, and stores with so many bars on the windows that you'd think they were selling takeaway jail time. The federal program to get cars up on blocks in people's front yards has been a real success here, as it has throughout the state of Arkansas. Clinton's intense desire to get into the White House may have been motivated by real estate savvy. The White House has great location. Clinton didn't do well on the Whitewater deal, but perhaps he's learned from his mistakes. To take the pulse of the Arkansas polity, I keep the radio of my rented Chevrolet Lumina on the AM band. Little Rock Talk Radio Talk is all about Jesus or politics, and each talk show caller knows the whole name of every legislator, city councilman, county commissioner, school board member, appellate court judge, highway superintendent, and chicken inspector in the state. I have never heard so much discussion of wire pullers, high binders, jacklegs, ballyhoo men, and boodle artists. Arkansans have politics like other people have hives. As for Jesus, there must be a lot of sin in Arkansas to support this much forgiveness. All sorts of Christian enterprises advertise on the radio shows. There are Christian bookstores, Christian daycare centers, Christian drug and alcohol counseling centers. For all I know, there are Christian strip joints. The girls don't disrobe. They don't dance or wear makeup either. I mean, this is Baptist territory. They sit in pews and take their clothes off in their hearts. Sometimes the Jesus and the politics get mixed together. Now, if Clinton were found out to be secretly Catholic, someone told me in the Capitol Hotel bar, then we'd be talking scandal. And I heard one preacher reading from the book of Daniel, chapter 11, verses 20 and 21. Then shall stand up in his estate a raiser of taxes in the glory of the kingdom. But within a few days he shall be destroyed, neither in anger nor in battle. And in his estate shall stand up a vile person, to whom they shall not give the honor of the kingdom. But he shall come in peaceably, and obtain the kingdom of flatteries. Call it simple piety if you like. I think he was dissing the 1992 presidential election. During the daytime in Little Rock, there really isn't much for a reporter to do except pester sources, and I don't have any. So I went to the old State House, a handsome Greek Revival structure. It's now a museum devoted to Arkansas history, this history being a straightforward affair. Arkansas was all mountains and swamps. Indians lived there. Rednecks took it. Yankees whooped them, and Tyson Foods moved in. A diorama depicting pioneer days was introduced with a quotation from one Thomas Bangthorpe, dated 1842. Happened in Arkansas. Where else could it have happened but in the creation state, the finishing up country? It's airs. Just breathe them, and they will make you snort like a horse. Which is one way to put it. Nearby was an exhibit of matched pistols with another quote, this one from a wisely anonymous member of the irresponsible sensationalist media of 150 years ago. Down in Arkansas, when a man cannot be gotten rid of at the polls, he is immediately killed off in a duel. Bill Clinton should be thankful that the worst thing he faces is some kidding in the press. One room in the old State House held a display of the inaugural ball gowns of all the first ladies of Arkansas. There was no Hillary Rodham Clinton dress. There were, however, a bunch of panties that Bill had collected. Just kidding. I bought a book at the old Statehouse gift shop. Territorial Ambition, Land and Society in Arkansas, 1800 to 1840, by S. Charles Bolton. Ethical imbroglios of the Whitewater type seem to have long tainted the horse-snorting heirs of the creation state. Mr. Bolton cites an 1819 letter from Robert C. Henry, a carpetbagger from Kentucky, who is urging his brother to trot down to Arkansas and get a snout in the trough. Writes Bob, "Should I be favored with the appointment of judge, I shall have it greatly in my power to serve my friends. We could do almost as we pleased. In fixing the seat of government, we can have an eye to some desirable tract of country. All our family and friends could settle there, and should thus acquire standing and consequence in the country." And sure enough, on Tuesday, March 29th, Jim McDougal, partner of the Clintons in the Whitewater development deal and owner of the defunct Madison Savings and Loan, decided he'd acquired the requisite amount of standing and consequence in Arkansas and filed to run for Congress on the Democratic ticket. The filing took place at the new Arkansas State House. This dates from 1911, is modeled on that great legislative edifice in Washington, and contains all its prototype's architectural features in compact form. A Tonkatoy U.S. Capitol. Jim McDougal was sallow-skinned, peaked, and dropsical. He walked with a cane. His head was shaved, and he was wearing a three-piece suit with pronounced pinstripes and lapels on the vest. He looked like a member of the Adams family who'd gone off to run a small-town savings and loan. McDougal greeted each member of the press with gracious charm, and then tore into us as a group. He said the financial figures show Whitewater is nothing. A sophomore accounting class would know it. But the arithmetic is beyond the comprehension of a gaggle of Yankee reporters. The gaggle of Yankee reporters wrote this down. McDougal denounced Clinton critic Republican Jim Leach as a fascist, and said that he, McDougal, was running for Congress because the Republicans have been starving America for 100 years. I dislike them intensely. He said he'd been fighting the forces of oppression since he was 12, and held up a snapshot of himself as a kid dressed in a soldier outfit. It costs $5,000 to file for a congressional race in Arkansas. McDougal has declared bankruptcy. He paid the filing fee with a $3,000 check and $2,000 in cash. He said the money came from small contributors. McDougal didn't seem to know who the incumbent was in his district. I asked an attractive young woman who was standing in the Capitol Rotunda, wearing a gold donkey pin in her blazer lapel. "Jay Dickey," she said. "A Republican. I can hardly say it, but he is." Which brings me to another book I bought at the old Statehouse gift shop, Ozark Mountain Humor, a selection of local folk tales edited by W.K. McNeil. The following was collected in 1973 in Fayetteville, Arkansas. The politician was campaigning through the South and stopped at one cabin.
"My, you have a fine family. 18 boys, he told the man in the cabin. "All good Democrats, I suppose."
"Well," the man said, "I tried to bring them up right, and they're all good Christians. And all but Sam is Democrats. That ornery cuss, he got to reading."
The next day I drove to Whitewater. "Better bring your checkbook. This kind of place won't stay a secret long," said the brochure that the McDougals and Clintons had printed in the mid-1980s. The development is 3 hours north of Little Rock. Outside town, the lawyers' offices disappear. Instead, every third building seems to be a church. Most are built from cement block, bear the names of denominations no Yankee has heard of, and have signs out front with messages such as CH blank blank CH. What's missing? You are. The other 2 out of 3 buildings are trailers. Rural Arkansas is poor, although you do see better-off areas. You can tell because the trailers are double-wides. There's a $1,000 fine for littering the highway in Arkansas, but if you throw car axles, old tires, beer cans, and broken furniture all over your front lawn, you apparently get a gold watch. The natural scenery is beautiful, however. Those rock ledges that stick way out into the air in a Snuffy Smith comic really do exist in the Ozarks. And so does an amusement park called Dog Patch USA. The 220-acre Whitewater parcel turns out to be a fine piece of land, a hardwood forested bluff overlooking the White River, in which there is some of the best fishing in the South. Bill and Hillary's own special lot was right on the water. I'll bet they planned on some real good times out here in the woods. Taking Ira Magaziner and Lonnie Ganier on possum hunts. Catching catfish on dough balls with George Stephanopoulos. Throwing a block and tackle over a shade tree limb. And dropping a new engine into Donna Shalala's Camaro. I had a little trouble finding the road into Whitewater. There's something about stopping to ask directions at homes with parked Harley-Davidsons, loose chickens, and signs saying, "Awful dog." Arkansas happens to be the number one state in the nation for fatalities per mile driven, and I was convinced that most of those fatalities occur while flatlanders are being chased out of driveways. But I was wrong. All the people I met in Arkansas were friendly, even after they found out I was a reporter. Either Arkansans are the most congenial folks in the world, or they are so bored that talking to me seems interesting. I lean toward the latter explanation because everywhere I stopped, on the way to Whitewater and back, folks wanted to discuss my Chevy Lumina.
"You like that car there? Heard it was a good car. Thought about getting one instead of a truck. Now what color would you call that?"
"Red." Not much happens in Arkansas, no matter what Thomas Bang Thorpe said, except at the bar in the Capitol Hotel. Come the end of the day, everyone shows up. Lawyers, clients, judges, defendants, businessmen, bankrupts, political rivals, reporters, the people reporters report on, friends of Bill's and Bill's worst nightmares. It's like a softball league after a Saturday in the park. We have a few drinks and share deep insights.
"You know what the real lesson of the Clinton presidency is? Always be nice to the fat kid who plays a stupid instrument in the high school band."
"It's a good thing we didn't re-elect George Bush. We'd be paying higher taxes. Congress would be deadlocked, and we'd all be bored to death with some incomprehensible Iraqgate scandal."
"You stole that nose-breaking joke from Jay Leno. Tanya Harding came to an abrupt halt, and Connie Chung broke her nose. I heard that on The Tonight Show."
Then we have a few more drinks and listen to the Arkansans talk politics. Kickbacks, rake-offs, payola, and lined pockets. Hush money, slush funds, booty and swag. Bond deal pork and tax break plums. Contract grift, construction graft, sweetheart legislation of every kind, plus jobbery, junkets, and palm grease. If one-tenth of what I've heard is true, everybody in the state of Arkansas is going to spend eternity in perdition. And if none of what I've heard is true, they're all damned to hell anyway for being the biggest liars ever. After quite a few more drinks yet, the real inside stuff gets spilled. You probably already know that Vince Foster was a lesbian. Chelsea's real father is House Banking Committee Chairman Henry Gonzalez. Robert Fisk has subpoenaed Eleanor Clift. And Roger Clinton shot Judge David Hale. Whoops, I didn't say that. That's not going to happen until next week. Then we have nightcaps. L.J. Davis wrote a long piece about Arkansas political corruption in the April 4 issue of the New Republic. Davis told the Washington Times that he'd been warned to leave Little Rock, but he came to grief before he could get out of town.
"All I can say," said Davis, "is I remember unlocking the door. 4 hours later, I woke up on the floor of the hotel room with a knock on my head. My kidneys hurt like hell. And I'll bet that is exactly what happened to me, too. Some Clinton administration thug sapped me on the noggin. That's why I feel so darn rotten this morning."
But what did Bill and Hillary really do? Did they break any laws? Are they sleazebags or what? Well, I'm a Republican. I'm in favor of sleaze. That's not what bothers me about Whitewater. What bothers me is here we have Bill being governor and Hillary a partner in a heavy-hitting law firm and their friend Jim McDougal running Arkansas's most aggressive savings and loan. They've got the government, the legal system, and the banking business wired. They're right in the middle of the largest economic boom in the history of the United States, and they still can't make money. I'm thinking, we're going to let these people tell us how to save on our medical bills? Then, however, I hear about Hillary Clinton in the cattle futures market. She takes $1,000 and turns it into $99,540 in 10 months. And I'm sitting on a CD trying to turn $1,000 into $1,000. She must have quite an eye for beef on the hoof. I'll hear no Bill Weight jokes until I've jogged off these deep fat fried pickles. All of a sudden, Hillary has appeal that I hadn't previously noticed. Seems like quite a gal, in fact. Say, Hill, are you busy after 96? Yet aren't the Clintons a little embarrassed about that gilded age of greed and selfishness stuff? Bill, during the 92 campaign, said,
For 12 years of this Reagan-Bush era, the Republicans have let S&L crooks and self-serving CEOs try to build an economy out of paper and perks,
as opposed to mortgage flips and margin trades. Turns out the Clintons' yuppie bashing consists of standing in the Rose Garden whacking themselves on the head with their own Gucci loafers. But it's all right, they're liberals. Liberals are supposed to be self-flagellating. And if liberals are going to feel guilty, they need to have something to feel guilty for. Furthermore, redistributing the wealth is what liberalism is all about. Bill and Hillary were just a little ahead of the curve. You have to understand that liberals are better than the rest of us. They care. Any money that the Clintons made, they spent to further their life of public service. If I made a bundle on leveraged real estate, timely broker tips, and legal fees from clients who wanted favors from my spouse, I'd use the money to buy a big car. Not the Clintons. They used the money to get elected to the White House. And there's a big car there already. Bill Clinton's record shows what a governor who cares can do. When Bill was first elected in the late 70s, the state of Arkansas ranked 49th in median income. And now it's 48th, all because West Virginia doesn't have a governor who cares the way Bill does. Same thing with education. In 1978, Arkansas was ranked 44th in her per-pupil public school spending. And now, well, actually now it's ranked 46th. But the point is, Bill cares about this. Over in 50th-ranked Mississippi, their governor probably just doesn't give a hoot. Is Bill honest? Let's imagine for a moment what it would be like to have a totally honest president of the United States. You want to know what's wrong with this country? If you voters would quit hanging out in bars, drinking, talking trash, and eating deep fat fried pickles, if you'd go get a real job, there wouldn't be anything wrong with this country. Is Bill corrupt? We're talking politics. Think about what politicians do. Imagine a big, likable guy in a fancy suit comes up to you on the street and says, I don't know you from Adam, but I'm going to do all sorts of wonderful things for you for free. And think about what journalists do. Imagine a smaller, less likable guy in a worse suit comes up and says, I don't know you either, but I'll tell you the complete truth about everything for a modest fee. So don't worry about Bill and Hillary. And don't worry about the bunch of us down in Little Rock. We were all humans in a previous life. They were reincarnated to run for office. We were reincarnated to chase politicians all over the map. If we catch one, I'll let you know whether deep fat fried Democrat is as good as those pickles. Healthcare reform. The Wall Street Journal, 1993. I can't seem to learn anything about President Clinton's health care reform plan. I watch the network news and discover that the plan cannot be summarized briefly. I read the papers and find the plan cannot be explained at length. I listen to the president himself, and he seems at least as confused as I am, though less succinctly. I also don't know why I'm supposed to take health advice from a man with a waistline like a Beautyrest mattress, the jogging pace of a beach sea lion, and the sleep habits of a teenage slumber party. I gather, from the president's sales pitch, we're supposed to come up with a large sum of money to invest in a vaguely described deal that's going to have a huge payoff someday. Isn't the SEC trying to crack down on this sort of thing? But our ignorance of the Clinton health care plan is of little import. Understanding government programs is like looking at the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. Form is more important than content. The plan is 1,400 pages long. Detailed specifics to come. You can stand on this thing to paint the ceiling. In my copy of the World Almanac, the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights occupy 4.5 pages. That's 4.5 pages to run an entire country for more than 200 years, and 3 reams of federal pig Latin if I slam my thumb in the car door. Of course, I haven't read this health care reform plan. I suspect Ira Magaziner has read the document only in the sense that you or I read the book of instructions that comes with a basement dehumidifier. And anyway, says the president, this might not be the real or final plan because he's an open-minded guy and wants to be bipartisan and hasn't had a chance to get everybody's input. Roger Clinton may have some bright ideas. Sox the cat may, too, though the plan does not cover veterinary expenses yet. We can, however, be certain of some facts about the health care reform plan. It won't work. No government proposal more complicated than This note is legal tender for all debts, public and private, ever works. And that doesn't work. Healthcare reform hasn't even started, and it isn't working. The administration's first step was to present the nation with 1,400 pages designed to reduce paperwork. The plan won't work and will be expensive. All comprehensive government entitlement programs grow vastly larger and more costly than they were meant to be. Witness Medicare, Medicaid, FDIC, and so forth. And the one time our country did have a comprehensive government entitlement program that was cheap, the Homestead Act, it involved the death or exile of nearly all the native people on the continent. Our health care system is too complicated and expensive. So, to fix it, President Clinton is proposing the most complicated and expensive piece of legislation in our nation's history. There is a much simpler way of making American medical treatment less expensive. Just make it worse. And this, too, can be accomplished under the Clinton plan. Federal health care reform will drive the best people out of the health care professions. What type of person is going to become a doctor, a nurse, or for that matter, a health insurance executive just to wind up as a bureaucratic goat or government hack? Students with straight A's can get more entrepreneurial freedom and cheaper health care benefits, tarring roofs. There will come a day when you'll be wheeled in for a heart bypass operation, and the surgeon will be the same fellow who's now behind the counter when you renew your car registration at the Department of Motor Vehicles. But let us not forget the moral dimension of health care reform. Everyone, rich or poor, needs health care to live, and everyone, rich or poor, needs food to live. Therefore, next year, the Clinton administration will introduce legislation mandating federal preparation of everybody's breakfast. Members of the public have a lot of questions about the president's health care plan. Will it cost me less? Can I keep my own doctor? If my kid gets an exotic disease, can I go broke looking for a miracle cure and then land a big Hollywood movie contract when Junior's hair grows back? We can divine the response to all these queries. As it was with spouses, so it is with government spokespersons. And let us remember Hillary as both. If an answer is more than three words long, it's no. Which brings us to Hillary Rodham Clinton herself and the salient point of the health care reform. The president has put a lawyer in charge of making doctors cheaper. Next, he'll be trying to get our grass mowed for less by calling the plumber to come have a word with the boy who does the lawn. Ms. Clinton's lawyer-led health care advisory panel did not, however, just leap in and suggest that doctors start to charge the minute conduct physical examinations in front of juries and get paid for doodling on pads of yellow paper. Instead, the panel carefully examined medical practices in a host of other countries that are going broke from excessive social spending. If Canada's health care is so great, how come more Americans aren't apprehended at the border trying to sneak into Ontario to get free liposuction? Such comparisons are of limited value anyway. Canada is a sparsely populated nation with a shortage of gunshot wounds, crack addicts, and huge tort judgments. What can we really learn from a medical system devoted to hockey injuries and sinus infections caused by trying to pronounce French vowels? We can learn, apparently, to fix prices. Price fixing worked so well in the old Soviet bloc, and it's still working with New York City's rent controls. Everyone knows how easy it is to find an inexpensive, nice apartment in a safe neighborhood in New York. And, by the way, why is price-fixing a public service when Democrats in the White House do it, but a crime when Republicans try it on the golf course? President Clinton is attempting to convince the American voters that they're going to be able to get sick cheaply. He's right. Getting sick has always been cheap, often free. It's getting well that costs a whole lot of money. When the price of an item is fixed above market value, there is a surplus of that item, as the Arabs discovered with oil. When the price of an item is fixed below market value, that item disappears, as the Russians discovered with everything. We have here a basic law of economics. The price of health care will be fixed below market value, and we're all going to die. The Caribbean refugee crisis. The American Spectator, 1994. Ed Crane, president of the Cato Institute, the redoubtable libertarian think tank, and I were having a cocktail hour chat about whether the Clinton administration should be sewn up in a sack full of cats or locked in a small, warm room with Michael Dukakis. After After a few sets of 86-proof curls with the liquid-free weights, Ed made a perspicacious comment about the Cuman rafters and Haitian boat people currently being persecuted by our Coast Guard on orders from the Commander-in-Chief.
"Damn it, P.J.," said Crane.
I'm quoting from memory, so excuse me, Ed, if I don't do your eloquence justice. I understand trace amounts of vermouth have been found in the brains of Alzheimer's victims. I've got to quit putting that stuff in the gin.
"Damn it," he said. "These people get on board things made out of oil drums, orange crates, balsa wood, and cardboard boxes. They cross hundreds of miles of shark-infested ocean, suffer hunger, thirst, and exposure, and brave, treacherous currents, high seas, and storms just to come to America. I say they're citizens. Give them their passports right on the Florida beach. No oaths, no exams, no forms to fill out. These are the kind of people we want in America.
But these are not the kind of people our infinitely compassionate, sharing and caring, hug-mongering sop of a president wants in America. Bill Clinton has blocked the only exit from the totalitarian nation of Cuba, closed an escape route held open by every U.S. administration, Democratic and Republican, for 34 years. What would we have thought of Konrad Adenauer if each person who came over the Berlin Wall had been shipped to a, give me another name for it, concentration camp? Then suppose that, once those East Germans were packed behind barbed wire, they were told they'd have to go back to East Germany to apply for West German visas. As for Clinton's attitude toward the Haitians, why, he's glad to invade their country. He's perfectly willing to shoot Haitians, but let them drive cabs in New York City? Oh, no. In Clinton's Caribbean refugee policy, we get a glimpse of the president's true nature, a look at the inner bill, a peek at the scum beneath the flab. Clinton's excuse for refusing sanctuary to the Haitians and Cubans is that they are economic refugees. Yes, these people are seeking real freedom, material freedom, freedom to do, have, and be. And they're probably not as interested as Bill is in the liberal idea of freedom, freedom to hand out child-sized condoms at daycare centers and so forth. Haitians and Cubans want to come to the United States, get jobs, work hard, start their own businesses. If they start their own businesses, they'll vote Republican. Of course, Bill Clinton hates them. Bill hates them and he fears them, especially the Cubans. Bill knows the Cubans are crazy. Only crazy people would flee from a country with free medical care, guaranteed employment for life, and first-rate gun control. The president and his sanctimonious twit of a wife have worked for decades to build a society like this, and here people are taking their lives in their hands to get away from it. Taking their lives in their hands. One more reason for Bill to despise our island neighbors. These people are mastering their fates. They're going to America to start a new life. Haitians and Cubans must think there's such a thing as free will, maybe even individual responsibility. But any good liberal knows we're part of a collective enterprise, which is run by Bill. To achieve our common destiny, we need leadership. That's where Bill comes in. And all our ills are the result of society's sickness. Calling Dr. Bill. Let's face facts about our disgusting political opponents. We've been nice to the liberals for too long. They're thugs. The liberal dream is to control people, to oppress and exploit them for some higher goal. And how are the liberals ever going to be able to control people brave enough to sail to Florida in a rum carton? In fact, even people of far less mettle than Haitian and Cuban refugees are difficult to control. This is why liberals hate people. A civilized person should no more tolerate the presence of a liberal than the presence of a member of the Ku Klux Klan. Indeed, it may be argued that liberalism is worse than the KKK, insofar as Klansmen only hate some people, while liberals hate them all. You can see the liberal hatred of people in the enormous liberal excitement about abortion and contraception. If people are hard to control, then, ipso facto, more people will be harder. And this is why liberals are always championing laws and social programs which are theoretically good for a class of people, while being provably disastrous for people themselves. Racial quotas, busing, welfare, my goddamn taxes. Liberals don't just lose sight of the individual or ignore his needs in the pursuit of broader goals. Liberals detest, abhor, and spit upon the human being. The core of the liberal belief is that the mass is more important than the man. As if God created not Adam and Eve, but a recovering fruit of knowledge taste test support group. Liberalism, however, dressed in sharing and caring modernity, is ultimately about the primitive, ignorant, tribal idea of collective life, and about human sacrifice. Liberals like that even better. The will, the conscience, the very existence of the person must be destroyed for the benefit of the mob. Liberals have the same morals as fascists, communists, Crips, and Bloods. The worship of collective power always ends in some kind of drive-by shooting, Pearl Harbor, for example. There may be, measured by some cold and pointless statistical means, such a thing as a greater common good. The power-grubbing, self-regarding Bill Clintons of the world tell us so. But there is no such thing as a greater common bad. Pain cannot, no matter what the unctuous creep in the White House says, be shared. Only individuals suffer. In this case, those individuals are packed into sad, unseaworthy little crafts, trying to make it to that ultimate bastion of individualism, America. But when they get here, they're going to discover that the only person welcoming them is Ed Crane, and maybe me if I recover from this hangover. Look for us on the sand, with our trousers rolled, holding aloft the sacred prize of freedom, shaken, not stirred. Do Haitians like their martinis with one olive or two? 100 Reasons Why Jimmy Carter Was a Better President Than Bill Clinton. The American Spectator, 1993. Number 1. Jimmy Carter had a nicer wife. 2. A smarter baby brother. 3. A less frightening mom. 4. And a... No, we can't bring ourselves to make fun of the first daughter, especially since some of us have been going through an awkward adolescent stage for nearly 4 decades. But we can say, damn it, Hillary, quit fussing with your hair and do something about Chelsea's. 5. And speaking of coiffures, Jimmy Carter never in his life got a haircut that cost more than $2.50, if appearances are anything to go by. Number 6. Carter had governed a more important state. 7. Carter had once held a job. 8. He came from a more cosmopolitan hometown. 9. And he had a more charismatic vice president. 10. It took Carter months to wreck the economy. Number 11. It took Carter weeks to become a national laughingstock. 12. Carter committed adultery only in his heart. 13. And if we know anything about female tastes, Carter was telling the truth about that. 14. As for military record, Carter was, comparatively speaking, a regular Audie Murphy. 15. They were on drugs in the Carter administration. They had an excuse. 16. We were on drugs in the Carter administration. We had an excuse. Number 17. Carter looked, think back carefully, we promise we're telling the truth about this, less foolish in his jogging outfit. 18. Jogging actually worked for Carter. Say what you will against the man, he's no double butt. And number 19. Carter passed out while jogging, and the nation was safe for a moment. Compare and contrast. Carter administration. Number 20. Pardoning draft dodgers. Clinton administration. Draft dodgers. 21. Carter administration. Women integrated into the military. Clinton administration. People dressed like women integrated into the military. Number 22, Carter administration, return of canal to Panama. Clinton administration, return of Haitians to Haiti. Number 23, Carter administration, bailout of Chrysler Corporation. Clinton administration, jobs in White House travel office for Hick Cousins from Arkansas. Number 24, Carter administration, creation of Departments of Energy and Education. Clinton administration. Can't find enough gay, disabled women of color to head the departments he's already got. Number 25, Carter administration. President successfully treated for hemorrhoids. Clinton administration. Hillary still heading health care reform panel. Number 26, Carter administration. Russians in Afghanistan. Clinton administration. Brit Hume in White House press corps. Number 27, Carter administration. Jody Powell with feet on desk. Clinton administration. George Stephanopoulos with feet not quite touching floor. Number 28. Carter administration. Kidding Mexicans about Montezuma's revenge. Clinton administration. Kidding Mexicans about NAFTA. Number 29, Carter Administration. Boycott of Moscow Olympics. Clinton Administration, not seeing as much of the Bloodworth Thomasons lately. Number 30, Carter Administration. Hostage rescue attempt in Iran. Clinton Administration, trying to get Zoe Baird confirmed at justice. Number 31, Carter Administration, Mount St. Helens. Clinton Administration, Air Force General Harold Campbell. Number 32, Carter Administration, peace between Israel and Egypt. Clinton Administration, peace between Bob Dole and Pat Buchanan. 33, Carter Administration, Elvis dead. Clinton Administration, Barbara Streisand all too lively. 34, Carter Administration, SALT II. Clinton Administration, U2. Number 35, Carter Administration, 3 Mile Island. Clinton Administration, Sam Nunn. 36, Carter Administration, Hyman Rickover. Clinton Administration, the Tidy Bowl Man. 37, Carter Administration, wimping out in the face of the second most powerful military force in the world. Clinton Administration, wimping out in the face of Slobodan Milosevic. Number 38, Carter Administration, gas shortage. Clinton Administration, gaseous administration since who knows when. Number 39, Carter Administration, Marielle Boatlift. Clinton Administration, which one is she? Does Hillary know about this one? 40, Carter Administration, Proposition 13. Clinton Administration, write your own Clinton libido joke in the space provided. Number 41, Carter was a good man to have on board when your canoe was attacked by a swimming rabbit. Number 42, Carter hardly ever hugged or kissed anyone in public except Leonid Brezhnev. Number 43, the FBI didn't kill anybody at Jonestown. 44, Burt Lance could make a bigger splash doing a cannonball into the Camp David pool than Webb Hubble. 45, Hamilton Jordan could beat Mac McLarty at arm wrestling. 46, plus Jordan could get into Studio 54. 47, Joseph Califano was prettier than Donna Shalala. 48, and he opposed abortion. 49, Warren Christopher was young and full of pep during the Carter administration. 50. And Warren Christopher's initials looked funnier on a briefcase than Cyrus Vance's did. 51. Zbigniew Brzezinski is worth more points in a Scrabble game than Anthony Lake. Number 52. Jimmy Carter didn't play any Fleetwood Mac songs on the campaign trail. 53. Or any Judy Collins records at home. 54. Or any saxophones anywhere. 55. The Undead. Carter Administration, Miss Lillian. Clinton Administration, that. 56. No one can say a word against any Carter Supreme Court appointee. 57. Carter did not use Bloomsbury, Mayfair, Pall Mall, Hackney, Notting Hill, Shoreditch, or any other London neighborhood as the name of his child. 58. One thing about Carter-era inflation, the money may have been worthless, but at least we had some. 59. Endangered species. Carter administration, the snail darter. Clinton administration, the DLC. Number 60. Jimmy Carter's nervous smirk was less demanding of a punch in the snoot, even if it did present a larger target. Major foreign policy questions. Number 61. Carter Administration, should Red China have a seat in the UN? Clinton Administration, is Macedonia what Macedonia is supposed to be called? Number 62, Carter Administration, does Nicaragua have strategic importance for the United States? Clinton Administration, is it Ukraine or the Ukraine? Number 63, Carter Administration, what type of relationship with Israel best serves America's interests? Clinton Administration, if those guys are so Jewish, how come they aren't on the staff of Tikkun? Number 64, Carter Administration, is it time for America to relinquish its global leadership role? Clinton administration? Should Chelsea go to Japan with Bill and Hillary? Number 65, Carter administration. Would economic sanctions on South Africa be effective? Clinton administration. How about economic sanctions on white males right here in the USA? 66, Carter administration. Should we sell wheat to Russia? Clinton administration. Let's just give them a bunch of money. 67, Carter administration. Is deployment of the neutron bomb immoral? Clinton administration. Does appointing Gene Kennedy Smith ambassador to Ireland put the Kennedys in their place or what? 68. Language which president would not shut up in. Carter, Spanish. Clinton, English. Number 69. Navy's football team can whip Oxford's. Worldview. What ideas loomed large inside their respective thick skulls? Number 70. Carter, human rights. Clinton, partnership role for the First Lady. Number 71. Carter, moral equivalent of war. Clinton, partnership role for the First Lady. Number 72, Carter, national malaise. Clinton, more mayonnaise. Number 73, Carter, diminished expectations. Clinton, David Gergen. 74, Carter did not, as part of focusing his agenda, address himself as stupid. He let us do that for him. Number 75. Carter wore real blue jeans and not the Levi's 550 roomy in the buns kind. Compare and contrast part 2. Number 76. Carter, Mork and Mindy. Clinton, Mary Matlin and James Carville. 77. Carter, Laverne and Shirley. Clinton, Cokie Roberts and Anna Quinlan. 78. Carter, the Dukes of Hazzard. Clinton, various half-brothers. 79. Carter, Three's Company. Clinton, Jennifer Flowers. Number 80. Carter, Happy Days. Clinton, 1980 to 1992. 81. Carter, The Incredible Hulk and Wonder Woman. Clinton, marriage seems stable for the moment, but superpowers are fading. 82. Carter, WKRP. Clinton, NPR. 83. Carter, Star Wars. Clinton, defense cuts. 84. Carter, Annie Hall. Clinton, Anita Hill. 85. Carter, Greece. Clinton, Moose. 86. Carter, Saturday Night Fever. Clinton, Saturday Night Working Late at the OEOB. 87. Carter, The Goodbye Girl. Clinton, Kimba Wood. 88. Carter, Midnight Express. Clinton, Bus Trips. 89. Carter, La Cage aux Folles. Clinton, The Marines. Number 90. Carter, All the President's Men. Clinton, Home Alone. 91. Carter, Abby Hoffman. Clinton, Socks the Cat. Number 92. Carter's poll ratings were higher in Iraq. 93. Carter walked the whole inaugural parade route. 94. Carter saved America from a plague of Misha the Bear Olympic mascot toys. 95. Had Bill Clinton helped the Shah of Iran get medical treatment? 96. Carter spent his time doing things like figuring out the White House tennis court playing schedule. The man knew his intellectual limitations. 97. Carter had enough clout to get Lonnie Guinier appointed to the Justice Department, and anyone who gets shot down for holding Mencken-ish views about the excess of democracy has to be some kind of friend of ours, even if she doesn't know it. 98. Carter let the Soviets have Angola, Ethiopia, and South Yemen, and in retrospect, the Soviets deserved no better. 99. Carter wasn't a throwback to the Carter era. Number 100. And let us not forget that Jimmy Carter gave us one thing Bill Clinton can never possibly give us. Ronald Reagan. Republicans take control of Congress. The American Spectator, 1995. Author's note. This article was written for Rolling Stone and rejected by its editors, who said honestly that they wanted a more serious exposition of conservative beliefs. And, pals of mine though they are, they need it. So I plagiarized as much as Friedrich Hayek's The Road to Serfdom as I thought I could decently get away with, weaving a few jokes into the denser sections of the text to put my own stamp upon things, and sent that to Rolling Stone. This, on the other hand, I gave to the American Spectator, which has been generous over the years in providing a home for wayward or exiled compositions. Introduction written for TASS. Mr. and Mrs. American Spectator reader, let P.J. O'Rourke talk sense to your kids. Do you have a mopey young person in your family? Does he or she possess an all-ebony wardrobe, have a lopsided haircut, and know what latte is? Is this slacker lying on your couch all day listening to Nine Inch Nails CDs, or making a lifetime career out of going to college, or still working in a Kinko's copy center at the age of 28, or trying to get an NEA grant to write a film script about all of the above? And the nose ring. Is negotiating a temporary removal for Grandma's visit going to require the intervention of Jimmy Carter? You may have a larva or pupa stage Democrat in your home. Try this test. Get the child's attention. Extra latte helps. Now say, Newt Gingrich. Did you receive the following reaction? Mom, Dad! Theatrical sigh. It's like... Eyes roll towards ceiling. Oh, man! Yes, a conservative tide is rising all across the political landscape of America, but some members of Generation X have climbed onto the outhouse roof of intellectualism and managed to keep their Doc Martens dry. As a special service to our readers, TASS has enlisted P.J. O'Rourke to have a word with the youngsters. P.J. is the International Affairs Desk Chief at the with-it and trendy Rolling Stone magazine. He speaks their lingo. He knows Dr. Hunter S. Thompson personally, and he claims that he can actually tell the difference between Nine Inch Nails and the noise a washtub full of cats makes when you throw it down the cellar stairs. Clip this article and hand it to your progeny. It explains, in language young people can understand, what's happening in Washington now that the Republicans are in charge, and why what's happening is a good thing even for people with facial tattoos. Who knows? Maybe the kid will buckle down and become manager of a Kinko's copy center. Republican hordes have descended on Washington. They rove where they will, sacking and looting, or, as it were, voting and golfing. Also talking on C-SPAN, listening to Rush Limbaugh, and signing enormous book deals. It is a frightful scene. Men risk having their taxes slashed in broad daylight. No woman is safe from dinner table conversations about unfunded mandates. Pathetic groups of unemployed Democrats huddle on Capitol Hill, homeless. Houseless, anyway. Senateless, too. The National Endowment for the Arts is threatened. See here, Mr. Subsidized Dramatist, can't your characters die of something besides AIDS? How about a sword fight once in a while? Public broadcasting is also at risk. Underprivileged children may be deprived of all things considered. Woefully imperiled are all the accomplishments of the Clinton administration, such as, Bill can forget about midnight basketball. The Republicans want to do away with whole sections of government. The Department of Education doesn't have a prayer. Ha ha, a little Christian coalition joke. Who says right-wing religious zealots don't have a sense of humor? Numerous congressional committees have already been eliminated, causing a severe business downturn in America's snoozing, doodling, and yawn suppression industries. The president was forced to make a conciliatory State of the Union speech, the short version of which was, Hillary, you'd better go home and fix dinner. And heartless welfare reformers will soon be erecting grim, drafty orphanages all over the country. Speaking of which, now that Rose is dead, Ted Kennedy is technically an orphan. In you go, Teddy. And, whack, mind the nuns. Everyone in the thoughtful, progressive, sensitive, compassionate, objective, and fair media world, which I inhabit, is awful upset about those darn Republicans. And I would be too, except I am one. I hear thoughtful, progressive, sensitive hissy noises in the audience. Tsk, tsk. You write for Rolling Stone. We assumed you were too hip to be Republican. Yeah, hip, that's me. I'm hip from Hip Street, and it gets hipper as you go along, and my pad is in the last crib, Daddy-O. Navel ring, tongue stud. Man, I went out and bought a 3-foot barrel hoop and got one whole butt cheek pierced. Where I come from, even the circus clowns dress all in black, and the only reason a dozen of them get in that little car is to show kids how miserably cramped life is for veal calves. Call Earth. I'm a 47-year-old middle-class male with a job. Every hippy-dippy thing that's thought up, from heroin addiction to special vegan lunch lines in the local high school cafeteria, I get to pay for. Of course, I'm a Republican. But there is one shred of beatnikery to which I cling. I still detest authority. I always did. My every bedtime was a Bataan death march. Cleaning my room, an exile to the mines of Siberia. I cannot see a school crossing guard without wishing for a grisly hit and run. Some credit their loss of faith to a beneficent deity permitting the existence of evil. I rail against God because I was told to stop eating paste in Sunday school class. To this day, I will not bring the car home before 11, even though it's my car and nobody lives in the house but me. And when I'm sent back through an airport metal detector, I scream that I have a steel plate in my head. I'll sue you under the Americans with Disabilities Act. You'll be court-martialed. You'll be busted to the lowest rank of the airport security service and made to sit in front of a PA system microphone all day, endlessly repeating, "The space by the curb is for immediate loading and unloading only." I spit on dominion and control, and the greater the power, the more my ambition. Which brings me to the subject of government. Great, hulking, greasy, obese, gobbling, omnivorous, ever-aggrandizing, fat-witted government. I am not its friend. In Washington, the Republicans are, in their wingtip hobbled, suspender-entangled, Old Spice befogged way, trying to destroy big government. The Republicans I like okay. The destruction I adore. Think of what big governments have gotten up to in this century. Not one, but two world wars. The Gulag, the Holocaust, aerial bombing of civilian population centers, the Berlin Wall, nuclear explosions, the post office. A wicked individual might want these, but he wouldn't have the cash and connections to get them. A villainous corporation could afford them, but has to market the products. The Vietnam draft would be a tough sell for even the most fiendish businessman. Get shot, get killed, get diseases from foreign women who despise you in their hearts. And never mind the 32-cent postage stamp. Governments do terrible things. All right, I sympathize. I do terrible things myself. Although it's getting harder to find somebody to do them with now that I'm 47 and a Republican. What bothers me is how the terrible government things are always for the greater common good. Communists, Nazis, and more than a few democratically elected leaders of the free world have told us in plain language that their loathsome acts were justified by felicific calculus, the most good for the greatest number. Censorship, genocide, the Volstead Act, wholesale expropriations of private property, segregation, religious persecution, mass deportations, and vaporizing Nagasaki have all been for the good of the nation, good for mankind, good for us in the long run, good for future generations. Amazing how well-meaning, how virtuous, how good the people in authority always are. I guess good people are just naturally attracted to government. You remember them from high school, the senior class president, the sophomore class secretary, the chair girl of that junior prom decorations and refreshments committee. They weren't like some kids I could name, keeping the car out to all hours looking for crossing guards to run over. The kids in school government were good kids. Teachers liked them. Parents liked them. Why, you could take one of those kids, pry his sucker-like mouth off the career counselor's behind, and heck, make him president of the United States. And we did. The thing I like about Republicans is that they're no damn good at all. I know. I'm one of them. A Republican just wants to get rich, buy oceanfront property, dump the old wife, and get a new blonde one who will listen attentively while the Republican talks about unfunded mandates over the arugula salad. Now, Republicans aren't really evil. They'll save the rainforest if they have to. Tell them that's where the golf ball trees grow. They'd better do something about the Amazon or they'll be teeing off with their kids' hacky sacks. And if Republicans notice that their oceanfront property is all ocean and no front, they'll pass a law against polar ice cap melting in a minute. But these guys in the lime green pants, hammering at bean bags with ping three woods, don't really care about global issues, much less social justice. The GOP majority in Congress is going to spend most of its time tinkering with the new Blonde Wife Act of 1995, and the rest of its energy will be devoted to giving Dutch rubs and those incentives of Republicans Indian rope burns to the enormous system of government which has been created over the past 60 years by the good people in authority who do care. The activists, the advocates of worthy causes, the idealistic leaders, the self-sacrificing organizers, all the good people, care even more than you enlightened youth. They say, "Oh, you? You just buy Newman's Own salad dressing, give some money to PETA, wear a red ribbon on your bridesmaid's dress, your sister's wedding, and applaud for Barbara Streisand, and you think you've done your bit. Sure you care. But you only care about things like high-tension power lines when they're causing childhood cancers in your neighborhood. We care about high-tension power lines in places that don't even have electricity. We care so much we can't sleep. We can't eat. It wrecked our marriage. And because we care more than you do, we're better people than you are. And because we're better people than you are, we have the right, no, the duty, to tell you what to do." Telling you what to do, being the entire idea of big government, with its agencies, experts, courts, laws, regulatory codes, and powers of taxation to fund health care reform, so that if I have a traffic accident while trying to run over school crossing guards, you pay my doctor's bills. And the people who control that big government, the people who care so much, really are better than the rest of us. Consider Harry Truman. You can tell Harry Truman was better than us because when he vaporized Nagasaki, it was for the greater common good. If you or I did that, we'd just be killing a lot of Japanese. Harry was in the right line of work. Politics is the ideal profession for good people like Harry Truman, and for the many other good people who have followed in his path, such as Lyndon Johnson, Bill Clinton, and Washington, D.C. Mayor Marion Barry, who only became good a couple of months ago. But, to judge by the size of the government in the District of Columbia, he's real good now. You see, it's hard for us not-so-good people to accomplish things. If we want to prevent childhood cancers caused by high-tension power lines, we have to quit our jobs, go back to school, and earn degrees in medicine, biochemistry, physics, and electrical engineering. Then we have to do years of research to determine whether or not high-tension power lines actually cause cancer. And if they do, we have to remove all the high-tension power lines and convince 250 million people to light their homes with the little candles left over from the last big birthday cake the kid got before he died. All a politician has to do is care. Staff and assistants handle the rest. This is why it's so important for big government to get bigger, so it can help you. For instance, you can't find a good-paying job. That's because in the 1980s, rich people took all the good pay and used it up. But big government can find a good-paying job for you because when governments get bigger, there are more jobs in the government. These pay well. And if you need money in the meantime, the government can print some for you because one of those good-paying government jobs is running the mint. That's just one way the government can help. And you need help, too, because people are trying to do horrible things to you all the time. Like the big food companies that put poison in your food so that you'll never buy food from any competing big food companies. The same thing with the car companies and all those dangerous cars they make. GM knows you can't go to a Ford showroom if you're a paraplegic and brain dead. You should sue. Big government means there are always plenty of judges and juries available, and you're a victim. You're a victim of lots of things, a victim of prejudice against racial minorities. Just look at those smug white people with the good-paying government jobs. What did they do to deserve them? And so what if you're a smug white person yourself? With black and Hispanic birth rates going through the roof, you'll soon be a minority too. Plus, you're disabled. You may not know it. That would mean you have a cognitive disability exhibited by not knowing you're disabled. Perhaps you don't recall any difficulty walking, talking, seeing, etc. So you're suffering from repressed memory syndrome too. Therapy can help. You were probably molested as a child by a beloved member of your household. It's all coming back now. Remember how Rover would run up and jam his nose into your... You need a government program. And so does Rover. So do all the Earth's animals. Whole species are facing extinction. Democrats, just for starters. Awful things are happening everywhere. Only government can stop them. The ozone's breaking out in holes. The atmosphere is so polluted that pretty soon we're going to have to get our air in little bottles from the Evian company. The greenhouse effect is running out of control. Is it warm in here, or is it... The end of the world! Did you ever wonder if Chicken Little had an agenda? I mean, was Chicken Little running around telling all the other chickens that the sky was falling out of pure